This program is brought to you by PersonalLifeMedia.com.
Welcome to Just for Women, Dating, Relationships, and Sex. I'm your host, Elisa Kreitman. This show is dedicated to bringing you the freshest, most useful information available today to help you continually become the most powerful, dynamic, juicy woman you know you can be.
Fortunately, I've achieved an unlimited level of sustainable happiness. And so they see the power of happiness just by being around me because I'm able to be authentically happy and I've figured out all the tricks. Since the beginning of time, women were taught to focus on others' needs. And so now that we're focusing more on our own needs, because we realize, mothers, our grandmothers are realizing that we have to focus on ourselves. So we are become 100%. And when we are 100%, that's when we can really serve others so they can be 100% too.
Today on the show, I have happiness and dating expert Amy Coget. Amy's going to give us some deep insight into the nature of happiness and show us how we can apply these happiness principles to achieve and maintain a consistently outrageously happy life. On the show today, we will discuss Amy's definition of happiness and the fundamentals of a happy life, Amy's formula for maintaining happiness during and after a breakup or divorce, what Amy calls lovership, and her perspective on how it will change your view of dating and partnership forever. We'll also look at the Passion Index, what it is, and how it can help you get what you want in the bedroom. Listeners, today we're going to learn about different exercises we can use to increase and sustain happiness in our lives, namely using the breakup formula. We're going to apply happiness skills to any area of our life, especially our love and sex life. We're going to discern the amount of passion we're letting flow through our lives and how to increase passion. So welcome, soon to be Dr. Amy Coget. It's great to have you on Just for Women.
Thank you, Elisa. It is such an honor to be interviewed by such an amazing interviewer like yourself for all of these women.
I'm not paying her. For those of you who don't yet know Amy Coget, Amy has a master's degree in organizational psychology with an emphasis in leadership and positive psychology. She is a PhD candidate, soon to be doctor. She is author of Wake Up and Smile, Your Guide to Sustainable Happiness, available in bookstores this summer. Amy is an active workshop leader and has been coaching people to live super happy lives for the past 8 years. She takes the new science of happiness, which is positive psychology, and combines it with ancient Eastern philosophies to offer pragmatic approaches for people to create sustainable happiness in their lives. You're up to a lot over there, Dr. Amy Coget. Okay, so Amy, the word happy can mean many things. What are you referring to when you say happy?
Happiness is one of those emotions that everybody thinks they know about, but it turns out nobody knows anything about it. Because of the new recent development of the science of happiness, we now understand what it is. However, the funny thing is that no one agrees on the definition of happiness, and so it's actually best to be described. The best that the researchers can do is a frequent experience of positive emotion. That is happiness. However, I have to tell you, there are three types of happiness. And the first type is the type that everybody has experienced. It is called hedonic happiness, H-E-D-O-N-I-C. And hedonic happiness is something that 100% of our population has experienced at one point in our lives. And this is from, we experience this type of happiness when we have external stimulus. For instance, if a secret admirer gives us flowers, we're happy. However, right after that, we could get in a fight with our mother, or we could get stuck in a traffic jam, so we're not happy anymore.
So hedonic is not lasting?
Correct. The next type of happiness is eudaimonic happiness, E-U-D-A-I-M-O-N-I-C. And this type of happiness is pretty new in the research community. It is sustainable. It is based from being your authentic self, utilizing your strengths, and having purpose and meaning in life. That is sustainable because we are in charge of it. We don't have to rely on external sources to give this type of happiness to us.
So if we're following our purpose in life, we're authentically sharing who we are, our desires, that's eudaimonic happiness, and that is sustainable. Whereas hedonic is fleeting. We seem to have no control over it. We're happy one moment, not happy the next. Okay?
Absolutely. And the third type of happiness was just coined this year in 2007. It is called charonic happiness, C-H-A-I-R-O-N-I-C. And charonic happiness, what differentiates it from the others, is a sense of spiritual connection. This is the type of happiness where you can be happy even when you're dying on your deathbed. This is the type of happiness that the Dalai Lama experiences.
Okay, so the Dalai Lama meditates from like 3 a.m. to 6 a.m. or probably longer every day of his life and has had intensive training since he was a child. So how do we experience that kind of sustainable happiness or even get a glimpse of it?
Through meditation, just like the Dalai Lama helps. Connection with nature also helps. And just the belief in knowing that there is a higher power involved in our daily lives.
Okay, so letting go of that, that's interesting because we want to come from a place where we are in control of where we're going, but you're saying maybe a little bit more of a co-creation between what is actually here that we can see and what we can't?
That's a good way of putting it.
Okay, so physical and non-physical. We'll get a little metaphysical on everybody. No, because it's interesting. It was just coined or, you know, put into the mainstream in 2007. That's this year. So what's going on in research and why is it called charonic?
Charonic happiness, they coined it in relation to hedonic and eudaimonic happiness, but really it's just to bring the element of spirit into happiness.
Okay, whereas before people weren't talking about the connection of something unseen as a source of real power in sustainable happiness. And would you say that because it seems like people are a lot more open to these kinds of conversations, these spiritual conversations, and that's why this is happening?
Yes, I think we are coming to a point in our human existence where we're looking for something bigger and better, where we're looking for some, we need some answers for what is our current state is in the world. And so that's why I think people are looking more to spirituality these days.
Okay, so in your coaching, what kind of happiness do you focus on?
I focus on eudaimonic and charonic happiness.
Okay, what does that look like in a typical coaching session?
Mm-hmm. Well, I contract with clients for 3-month time periods. And during that time, I consider it a happiness incubation period. And that is, in the beginning, we talk about creating a positive self-image and what are our strengths and how do we determine their strengths and how do we use them, their our strengths, and what do we do with this information now that we have it. And this using our strengths is really a daily activity. And through a number of assessments, that's how we create the positive self-image. And then we move forward into creating more authenticity and finding out what gives my client meaning in life. And how does my client really have utilize their strengths and see the meaning and feel confident in their authenticity? And I also have a spiritual component to it as well.
What's the spiritual component? Because I'll say you're a psychologist, and I don't know, but it seems like spirituality hasn't quite yet gone mainstream into therapy, traditional therapy. So how is your coaching a little bit different utilizing spirit?
Mm-hmm. Well, first, I have to clarify, Elisa, that I'm actually not a psychologist. I did not study clinical psychology. I study organizational psychology. So I do know about psychology and how the human mind works. However, I'm not educated in the DSM, say.
What's DSM?
That is the disorder manual that tells clinicians what is wrong with their clients, say anxiety, bipolar, depression, and so on. I actually don't buy into the DSM.
Oh, now we're getting juicy here. She doesn't buy into the DSM. It almost sounds a little naughty. Okay, go ahead.
It turns out that in positive psychology, it's been brought to light that most of the institutions around psychology have focused on what's wrong with humanity. And I believe that everyone has something wrong with them. According to this particular manual, we're a little obsessive compulsive at times, or we're a little anxious at times. No matter what, it is going to happen. It's part of humanity. Now, if we focus on that and we talk about our problems, we're going to be caught in this downward spiral. But if we take a positive psychology approach and build on what is working, and we build on what it comes natural, and we build on what is your strengths, it's a totally uplifting spiral of positive emotions in someone's life.
Wow. I really, really like what you're saying. It sounds like a complete break from how we've diagnosed and treated people in the past. And so positive psychology really, it sounds like, I didn't realize how different it really is from traditional mainstream psychology and therapy, sounds like, which would also lend itself to the kinds of pharmaceutical drugs that get prescribed and things of that nature. And so you're saying you focus on the assessments, what people's strengths are, and focus there. Okay, so what if someone just can't seem to get on the happy train?
By the time people come to me, they're ready for the happy train. Perhaps they've been in therapy for 15 years. Perhaps they've been depressed their whole entire life. You know, they just don't know what else to do. They think that happiness is an impossibility for them. And from me, fortunately, I've achieved an unlimited level of sustainable happiness. And so they see the power of happiness just by being around me, because I'm able to be authentically happy and I've figured out all the tricks. So they see it as an example, leading by example. So ultimately, it's kind of a step-by-step process that in the beginning of the 3 months, my clients are not happy. Maybe they've never even experienced happiness before. But by the end of the 3 months, after they learn happiness as a skill and a lifestyle, then they can deal with everyday situations, or everyday, what I like to call, happiness challenges.
Okay, so what do we do when a happiness challenge comes up?
Well, the first thing to do is to realize that happiness is in your own control. And too many times we've been taught that happiness is dependent on people, places, and things. Like, oh, my husband's not making me happy. Oh, this beat up old car is not making me happy. Oh, I wish I was in a bigger house, then I would be happier. But the focus on eudaimonic happiness really brings the client to a place of understanding that their choice and happiness is their own control. And so when a happiness challenge arises, that's the first thing to do. Okay, is this in my control? Yes or no? Second is, how do I utilize my strengths to get out of this happiness challenge? And usually between those two things, the happiness challenge is taken care of.
Nice. I like that. So it takes a lot of presence of mind to stop yourself when you're faced with a challenge. Remind yourself, okay, happiness is a choice. And how am I going to utilize my strengths to get myself over this obstacle? I like that. So basically, to recap, happiness is a choice. And if you find yourself stuck with a challenge, obstacle to your happiness, you can go back to the assessment where you figured out what your strengths are and really utilize that to push yourself forward. I know that I am a happy person, a humorous person. I know even for myself, when I actually did the analysis, I have a very clear understanding of what my strengths are now that I've done this sort of assessment. And I know you use that assessment very powerfully in your coaching. And just to kind of throw in there, my top strength is curiosity and interest in the world. And so I many times find myself going back to, oh yeah, why am I here? Why am I doing this? What am I doing? And it's pretty brilliant. Can you tell us a little bit more about the assessment?
Absolutely. And everyone can go on the internet and find out their own strengths at www.authentichappiness.com. And it's called the V as in Victor, IA Strengths Survey. It means values in action. It's basically an analysis of it's the opposite of what's wrong with us.
Talk to us a little bit more about the difference between, I'll say, traditional psychology and positive psychology, because I think that's really fascinating how you've been distinguishing the differences.
Sure. The differences, it turns out that this is actually an institutional issue. Back in the 1940s, when there were mental health institutions put in place, they would only fund research that was related to fixing human beings' problems. And so this became a systemic issue because all of the psychologists and professors who wanted to do research had to, in order to get funded, they had to fix someone's problems. And so the traditional psychology is about fixing someone's problems, fixing what's wrong with them. Whereas positive psychology says, hey, you know what? Let's stop talking about problems and let's start talking about what's working and what's good about us. And so they've started studying it. And fortunately, there is a shift now in funding that is available for this type of research.
Nice. I love it. Amy, tell us some exercises we can do to help keep happiness sustainable in our lives.
Sure. One intention I like my clients to set every single morning is saying to themselves, today is the happiest day of my life. And really feeling it and setting the intention for today is actually going to be the happiest day of my life. And I was taught that by a man who was nominated for the Nobel Peace Prize 19 times. His name is Dr. Robert Mueller, and he wrote a book called Most of All, They Taught Me Happiness, and he worked in the United Nations for 40 years. And he is a survivor of the Holocaust, and he said to me, Amy, happiness saved my life in a Nazi death camp. And every morning I woke up and I said, today is the happiest day of my life. And so if, you know what, if he can survive in a Nazi death camp, we can survive in our everyday lives. So please set the intention, today is the happiest day of my life. Secondly, gratitude. Gratitude is the fastest track to happiness. And we have endless things to be grateful for. Our legs, our arms, our eyes, our family, our friends, the food in our refrigerator, the roof over our head. And so I ask my clients to log 5 things in a gratitude journal every day, never repeating anything. Third is be kind. You know, happiness is not rocket science, fortunately. It's funny to have a doctor say, just be nice, because it's actually very powerful. And it was just linked to happiness, I believe, in 2006. So I have my clients doing random acts of kindness, at least 5 a day. There's actually a Random Acts of Kindness Foundation that gives us ideas about things that we can do that constitute a random act of kindness. But if you think about, Elisa, the last time someone performed a random act of kindness on you, were you happier?
I was ecstatic.
Can you tell us about that time?
I came home once. I was dating a man and he had been going through a very difficult time. And I just held so much space for him and really took care of him and put attention on him, and completely unexpected. It was just a natural expression. And the next day there was this huge bouquet of roses and a card that deeply expressed to me how, you know, good it felt for him. And I guess that's not really random, because, you know, there's a little bit of a precursor to it. But I know what you're saying. I know what you're saying is when someone takes the time, like when someone pays the meter and, you know, you're going through the toll, little things. When my housemate, you know, leaves me some flowers or, yeah, so I understand what you're saying.
Right. And then can you give us an example of the last time you performed a random act of kindness?
I bought a friend breakfast. It's true. Basically, what you're saying is it feeds, you know, if that energy is creative and powerful, that when we do things to be kind to others, it really fuels something. And, you know, it's interesting. I was just thinking, it seems so simple. You know, gratitude, giving gratitude is one of the four cornerstones in my book also, because the power of giving gratitude is so enormous and it's so easily overlooked, which is why it's a practice and we have to practice. So I love that you have that as one of your cornerstones and exercises as well as a way to sustain happiness over time. We're going to take a break, and when we come back, we're going to talk more with Amy Cogier, happiness expert, about some other things that we can do to find out what really turns us on and makes us passionate in life and how that can lead to a sustainably happy life. We'll be right back. This is Elisa Kreitman, and you're listening to Just for Women, Dating, Relationships, and Sex.
Download Hit On with DJ Star D, new music for your personal life. Get free, soft, sensual, ethereal music and dance tracks that will get you up from personallifemedia.com.
Welcome back to the show. This is Elisa Kreitman. I'm your host of Just for Women, Dating, Relationships, and Sex. We're speaking with Amy Cogier, happiness expert, relationship expert, dating expert, happiness coach. We were talking about happiness, the roots of happiness, and how to have that as a sustainable existence in our lives over time. So now we're going to talk about the passion index, what it is and how we can utilize it, namely in the bedroom, to get what we want. Amy, tell us about this passion index.
I love the passion index. Women are coming into their authenticity more and more, and the focus is becoming more and more on ourselves instead of on others. And in order for ourselves to understand ourselves, I've created what is called the passion index. The passion index is an exercise to help us monitor what we care about deeply. And this is a journal, and every time you experience a extreme positive emotion or an extreme negative emotion, you log it into the passion journal. And so you start noticing people, places, things, and ideas around what is bringing that intense emotion up for you. So to actually start understanding more about what we're passionate about helps us understand what our needs are and who we are as an authentic individual. The application to the bedroom is imperative, because if we are not in understanding of what we're passionate about in the bedroom, how are we going to have passion? So if you take those extreme emotions and you apply them in the bedroom context, then an awareness starts increasing around what you want in the bedroom.
All right, let me just take a step back. You said to log just powerful emotion, positive or negative. So what does knowing a negative emotion give us access to?
It allows us to create boundaries and understand what is not okay for us. So if my partner is in the bedroom with me and we are getting romantic and he's got really bad breath, it ruins the moment for me. And so I'm going to say, look, can you go to the bathroom and use the mouthwash? And you know what? Next time, he probably is going to use the mouthwash before we start getting into the romance.
Got to be careful, careful, careful on that one, though, because I know from the work and the interviews that I've done that men are really sensitive, and to really present information like that in a very delicate way. How would you say that to a man? Because that's pretty sensitive. How would you say that in a way that wouldn't diminish a man or make him feel uncomfortable?
Actually, I wouldn't say anything at all. I would just bring over some mints.
You would? Really?
And I would take one myself, and I would offer one to him.
Okay, so kind of giving him the heads up and let him say something. Okay, so you wouldn't bring over a tray of mouthwash. You'd you just give him a mint. Okay, tell us more about the Passion Index. So we have a journal, and we're writing down emotion that is intense, positive or negative. What else?
Well, we're not only logging the emotions, but we're logging the people, places, and ideas that bring that emotion up for us. And so the idea is to not only log the emotions, but to start understanding what type of creations are going in your environment according to people, places, and ideas of what fosters the passion for you. For instance, I feel passionate when there's candles lit and there is intention on being present in the bedroom. There is water available, and that helps me feel passionate. But if the mood's not set, then it's hard. I'm not going to get to that passion.
All right. So taking an inventory, knowing what makes, I'm sure there's things beyond water and candles. You're just playing light. I can tell, happiness expert, there's a lot more going on. Okay, so we're talking about communicating these desires, setting up the atmosphere, and mostly we're talking about maintaining happiness throughout our lives, and namely in the bedroom. So what happens if we hit a place where we're not both on the same page? Our lover and ourselves are a little bit of an impasse. How do you maintain happiness through a bit of a break in what each of us wants?
Well, remember that happiness is your own responsibility. And so because this other person doesn't want what you want does not mean that you can't be happy. It just means that either you have to communicate and compromise or, you know, next.
That cut and dry.
Well, it's about really compromising and finding the happy medium and seeing if it's a non-negotiable or if it's going to be fine.
Okay, so basically take responsibility for our happiness and going for what we want, really. I mean, creating a situation where we can really have a partner who is open to what we want. So tell me a little bit more about the Passion Index. Is there anything else we need to know?
Just use it. You know, it is hard to create passion if you don't know what makes you passionate. And so to really spend some time devoted towards understanding what we're passionate about as individuals, as women, and then really communicating that to our partners is essential in having a passionate relationship.
You know, it's interesting. I've heard this over and over again, the same words, how important it is for us to know what we want and communicate what we want. So the tools you're using are the assessment for the strengths and now the Passion Index. So those are your main tools for understanding. So to recap the Passion Index, we're basically taking an inventory of the people, places, and ideas that bring up intense emotion, whether positive or negative, positive tending to lead us toward where we want to go, and negative to let us know, hey, this is a boundary, this isn't what I want. So then we need to be able to have the confidence to communicate those desires to ourselves and to our partners, and then compromise within those boundaries. This is the perfect segue into a phrase you were telling me about, very, very interesting. The gap between dating and partnership, the whole wide open field that you call lovership. Talk to me about lovership, Amy.
I love lovership. Lovership is based on passion, romance, excitement, giving, receiving, loving, and exploring sexuality with each other. I found that after we're, you know, we go out to dinner with someone for a few times, we're like, oh, this, I'm really jiving with this person. I really like this person. I'm ready to, you know, go into the next level with this person in the bedroom. And so the lovership really allows for exploration and communication without judgment and without commitment necessarily. Some loverships, I think, are exclusive and some loverships are non-exclusive, but it really offers space and time for us to cultivate passion and for us to cultivate communication in the bedroom and to cultivate trust and all of that with before we actually move into relationship or partnership.
Gotcha. So we've gone on a few dates. We realize, wow, this is somebody I want to spend some more time with. I'd like to be more intimate with him, maybe move into a sexual relationship. And clearly, we're not ready for partnership. So lovership has a whole new set of rules, maybe not rules, but guidelines. What are the foundations or the cornerstones of lovership?
I think it's really important to talk about values at this point and talk about what are the values of lovership. For me, I find that the values in lovership are passion, giving and receiving, spirituality, understanding each other's bodies, seduction, romance. And it really allows for that to grow between two people. And if that person is, let's say you enter into a lovership and that person is not compatible for one reason or another, then it tells you that maybe now's not the time to move forward with that person.
This is great. This is why I love this whole concept, because I think it would save not only women, but men a lot of grief in knowing what's going on within two people relating, and you really get to say, hey, this is what I want. And again, it goes back to the passion index. You have to know what the heck you want. Where are you at in your life? What do you want to create? Okay, so how would we have a value conversation with someone?
Well, first, I want to say that I've heard endless complaints about the lack of romance, the lack of seduction, the lack of passion. And by creating a lovership with someone that allows you to really give an opportunity for each other to say, this is what I think romance is. This is what I think seduction is. This is what works for me. This is what makes me excited. This is how I orgasm.
Great. So basically what you're saying is each person gets to define the guidelines. It's totally wide open. Awesome stuff. We're going to take a short break to support our sponsors. This is Alisa Kreitman, your host of Just for Women, Dating, Relationships, and Sex. I'm with Amy Coget, happiness expert extraordinaire, and we'll be right back.
PersonalLifeMedia.com. Free internet audio programs on life, love, and the pursuit of happiness. Listen from your browser, iTunes, your iPod, or MP3 player today at PersonalLifeMedia.com.
Welcome back. I'm Alisa Kreitman, your host of Just for Women, Dating, Relationships, and Sex. We're having a very interesting conversation with Amy Coget, happiness expert, and we've been talking about a new phrase on the scene called lovership, which is a very distinct kind of way to relate. It's in between dating and partnership. And we're going to talk a little bit more about the five cornerstones of what lovership is. So, Amy, we talked about the passion index, knowing what we want, what we're passionate about, and what to do with those emotions when they come up. Let's talk now about the second cornerstone of lovership, which is romance.
Right. Romance. Where would we be without it?
And I think, if I can interject, many times romance gets lost in a partnership, and there's a lot of people having sexless, boring, complaining marriages because the lovership wasn't even considered. People weren't talking about what they wanted before they entered into a partnership, whether it was consciously, mostly unconsciously. So how can we get the romance back?
Well, the passion index is a great place to start. And since we now know what we're passionate about, romance can really facilitate that for us. So if I am really passionate about chocolate-covered strawberries, but then I never, ever, ever, ever receive chocolate covered strawberries from my lover, I'm going to be disappointed. And so my lover needs to know that I love chocolate covered strawberries. And so they're more likely to bring them home for me at night, which will help romance me into the bedroom.
It's almost as though you could give your passion journal to your lover, and there they could explore what is romantic for you. You know, it's giving that concept of giving a man the information that he needs to please you. You know, it really eradicates the complaining. Give him quality information so you can get what you want, but first you have to know what it is you want. Okay, great. Let's move on to honesty and communication structures as step three of the cornerstones for lovership.
Honesty and communication are essential in any type of relationship. And so often we're not in touch with our honesty or we're not in touch with our authenticity. And so it's hard to communicate those things. But really feeling confident enough in our honesty to be able to have these difficult type of communications. But honestly, in lovership, it's not difficult because it's acceptable. And that's what the whole basis of lovership is. And so if you feel confident in what you're passionate of, because you just journaled about it for however long, then it's okay to be honest about it.
Right. And so the journal gives us access to that. But also, it just amazes me that people, myself included, would want to create kind of unconscious partnership with someone, even though our deep needs have been overlooked. You know what I'm saying? And I think it's just the conditioning that we've sort of been brought up with, to twist ourselves up into a pretzel to please this person and get his acceptance and approval, instead of really knowing what is going to please us and being a stand for that.
Absolutely. Since the beginning of time, women were taught to focus on others' needs. And so now that we're focusing more on our own needs, because we realize, our mothers, our grandmothers are realizing that we have to focus on ourselves. So we are become 100%. And when we are 100%, that's when we can really serve others so they can be 100% too.
Okay, great. Let's move on to the fourth cornerstone, which is sexual desire, seduction. And again, I'm just thinking that addressing these topics soon after dating, as you're getting into a more intimate relationship, it's vital to talk about what your sexual desires are. How do we approach that?
Openly and honestly.
Step four.
By creating a lovership with someone, it opens the doors to really talk about these tough topics. And so these tough topics of romance, passion, and seduction are the, like what you say, cornerstones for a passionate lovership. And so since I know that I'm about to create a lovership with someone, I want to know how they like to be loved. And I want them to know how I like to be loved.
I like that. And really, being confident enough to ask for what you want and the way that you want to be loved. And seduction?
I just get such a smile on my face when I think about seduction, because there is such an interplay between two people when seduction is at work. And we don't really necessarily have a lot of it at the workplace or in our family. Or this is kind of like a long lost romantic medieval type of relationship. And if we can think about a time when we were seduced, like let's say we were at a wedding and we met a stranger who is tall, dark, and handsome, and we can tell that that tall, dark, and handsome stranger was kind of giving us that special look from across the room, and then that tall, dark, and handsome stranger comes a little closer, and then our heart starts beating a little faster, and we can feel the prowess, we can feel the seduction. That is exciting. And then when that tall, dark, and handsome man asks us to go for a dance, that's the icing on the cake, right? But because these particular experiences in life are so few and far between, to build that into a lovership of like, oh, on Friday night, I know I'm going to get seduced, or Friday night, I know that I'm going to be the seducer or the seductress. When my man comes home, he doesn't know that I'm going to be in my red silk nightie. It just builds in another dynamic that could potentially be lost in the partnership later on.
Exactly. That's what I was thinking, you know, and people who are wanting to add more passion, romance to their relationships can look at these cornerstones of lovership and say, wow, that's right. I've lost touch with my sexual desire. I've lost touch with seducing my man, and really start to put those things back. And if maybe they're at a loss for what actually turns them on, go back to the passion index. So I can see where this is really a powerful tool. Okay, let's talk about the fifth cornerstone, which is spirituality and giving and receiving.
Giving and receiving is so important, because wonder if we are always giving and never receiving, or wonder if we're always receiving and never giving. And so it's really great to have a conversation with our lover about equanimity here. And when we're involved in our lovership, how much do I want to be giving and how much do I want to be receiving? And this is connected to spirituality, because spirituality in and of itself is about fueling and refueling and always getting, you know, higher and higher, so to speak. But we, in a sexual relationship with someone, we're receiving that energy from someone, and we're giving that energy to someone, and we can't have healthy sexual functioning when we're neither giving nor receiving.
So the two are tied together. That makes sense. So what other parameters or guidelines do we need to be aware about as we're creating a lovership? Since this is such a new concept, we have these cornerstones to sort of check us into, okay, what are the facets that I want to cover in this? But what are some other things we need to address?
I think having the conversation about where is this lovership going? Let's say the lovership is great. Then what? Does your partnership look like my partnership, or does it not? And maybe if it doesn't, we can even forego the lovership, because we know that it's not going to be leading to the partnership. But basically, it's all about being on the same page and having the same values and understanding each other.
So it's about laying down the tracks in the beginning about where the lovership is actually going. And asking those tough questions, I would think, do you want children? Do you want to be married? And I know a lot of what I'm learning through a lot of the interviews that I'm doing is that it's really okay to ask someone in the upfront what they truly want. What are you getting on board here for? And where are we going? And that it's okay. I mean, and if the person runs away, perfect. Then we've weeded out, we've sorted out who not to be with. And it's very empowering.
Absolutely. I've had relationships where I've created guidelines, and I've had partnerships where I don't create guidelines. And it is so much more powerful in relating to each other, knowing, oh, this is what I need in order to be my perfect self. And this is what you need in order for you to be your perfect self. And how can we really help each other be that perfect self so we can be the perfect couple?
Tell me some exercises that we can do inside of this lovership that'll help us maintain happiness over time.
The continued romance, the continued seduction, the continued choice of being happy and not putting responsibility into the other person's hands. Also, to talk about boundaries and non-negotiables. One gigantic thing is to be willing to walk away if your needs and desires are not met. And also, create a structure around yourself with supportive sisters or supportive friends or supportive family members or a therapist or a happiness coach to really help support you, because this is a gigantic generational shift and we need each other's support.
I love it. I love it. I love it. We are going to take one more break to honor our sponsors. We will be right back. This is Alisa Kreitman, your host of Just for Women, Dating, Relationships, and Sex. I'm with Amy Cogier, happiness expert. We'll be right back.
Listen to Living Dialogues, Thought Leaders in Transforming Ourselves and Our Global Community with Duncan Campbell, Visionary Conversationalist, bringing you the best in new paradigm thinking on personallifemedia.com.
Welcome back from the break. This is Elisa Kreitman, your host of Just for Women, Dating, Relationships, and Sex. I'm here with Amy Cogé, happiness and dating expert, and we're talking about a new generational shift, new terms that are coming out, new concepts that are being created. We were just talking about lovership. Now we're going to talk about how Amy helps people maintain happiness during intense situations in their lives, namely a breakup or divorce. So Amy, tell me a little bit about how you came to create this breakup formula and how it can provide us with sustainable happiness in our lives.
The breakup formula came about because so many of my clients come to me when they're breaking up.
Go figure.
So the breakup formula is a very easy five-step process. And the five-step process starts with, well, first of all, you cannot enter into the breakup formula until you are breaking up. Until it is for sure that, yes, you are breaking up, that's when you say, okay, I need to grab the breakup formula from the shelf. And the first step is to acknowledge the breakup.
All right, wait, let's clarify, because many people are like, oh, you know, Susie and Joe broke up again. So you're saying when Susie's really ready to cut the cord from Joe.
Absolutely. And she is ready to step up to the plate and not go back. So that is acknowledging the breakup, saying, yes, this is final. This is happening. It's true. I'm no longer questioning it. And I'm ready to move into step two, which is accepting the breakup. This is really coming to terms that, yes, not only are we breaking up, but it's a good thing. And I'm accepting it and I'm ready to move forward. The third step is to identify learning lessons, because every single person is brought together to teach us something, or that we learn something about ourselves as individuals or ourselves in relationship. And we are a different person after we've had a relationship with that person. So the idea is to identify the learning lessons of what makes us a better person about ourselves or in relationship from that individual. The fourth step is to, and I back to that step, I like to consider like actually a living list. You're actually writing down what it is that you learned from this person. And a lot of times it comes in reflection. It's not all going to come to you in the 5 minutes that you sit down and make the living list. It'll come to you here, it'll come to you there, whenever. And so really just allow that living, breathing list to unfold. When you really feel like it's complete, then you can move into the next step, which is to be grateful for those learning lessons and to express gratitude. Whether you write a letter to your former partner and burn it, or you write a letter and email it, or you have, maybe you're on good terms and you go out to dinner and talk about expressing your, you know, you express gratitude for those learning lessons. Nevertheless, it is important to really come into gratitude after the breakup. The fifth and final step is the letting go exercise. This exercise is a physical exercise. We're out of our heads now and into our bodies, and we are really ready to let go of this situation. And so I encourage my clients to go into a room by themselves and cultivate all of the pain, all of the anger, all of the suffering, all of the disappointment, all of the hurt, to the surface of their skin, to the point where they are ready, about to explode with all of this quote unquote negative emotions. So that's when you take a deep breath and you raise your hands to the sides of your head and on either side, and then you press down like a French coffee press as you're exhaling. So as you're exhaling, your hands are moving down your body slowly all the way into the ground. And so it's a psychosomatic response where your body really lets go of those quote-unquote negative emotions. And it actually works. and you actually feel different. And the letting go exercise is a footnote, is perfect for anything at any time. Let's say you get in a fight with a customer service representative, or maybe you had an unpleasant conversation with your mother that day. Who knows? But you can always do the letting go exercise. But it is essential in the breakup formula, because if we never let go of the person that we were in relationship with, it doesn't give us an opportunity to have space for someone new to come in.
Sounds like, too, what you're not saying in that is no post-relationship kind of sex or connection. Like, that letting go exercise is really a powerful way to cut the cords. And I know sometimes some of us can slip back into that connection because it felt so good or whatever. But you're saying, so what would you recommend if after the letting go exercise, where we gather up all the those thoughts and French press them down? I like that analogy. That's really cool. What if we have desire to reconnect with this person and yet we know it's not good for us?
Don't go with the desire. You know, stay in faith with your breakup formula. Stay in faith with the reason why you broke up is a good thing. And so put that energy towards finding someone new.
And it also sounds as though we can apply this letting go formula to other intense situations in our lives, you know, like divorce, as we said, or maybe a death or some kind of loss, where the visualization of it is really what is giving us this powerful new freedom to move on.
Absolutely. And divorce, we can really exchange the words breakup and divorce without any problem at all. So it can be a divorce formula or it can be a breakup formula. And the letting go exercise is a part of the breakup formula / divorce formula, but it also is good for other things like what you just mentioned.
Yeah, it's interesting. You know, you mentioned quickly in lovership about sisterhood and the importance of having our sisters, friends around us to support us in this. So I could see where sharing this formula would be really important as a way to support each other in continually moving on from things that no longer serve us.
Absolutely. And no person is an island. And so if we are going to break some boundaries, and if we are going to create new terms like lovership, and if we are going to have conversations that we've never had before in the history of women, then we need support to talk about it. And women, there was a study at UCLA that said when women get together, they reduce stress because we nurture each other. And so the idea is that in our lives, we're always the nurturer. And so when we actually get together and we become nurtured by other women, it fuels us to go back out there and feel confident in our authenticity and our communication.
Yes. You know, you've talked twice now about the changes that are happening sort of evolutionary, planetary with women, which is why the advent of lovership exists now. Can you tell me a little bit more about maybe some research you've done or some insights you have, and what is going on with women? How are we changing? How are we becoming more empowered?
In Generation X, they're looking at the former generations about, wow, there's a 51% divorce rate. Wow, something isn't working in this model. And also, women are working. You know, we're the first generation that really is expected to work. And my mother didn't work until my parents created their own business. And my grandmother didn't work, and her mother didn't work. So we're in Generation X. It really is, we're having to deal with new expectations in society. And so no longer are we just the mother, but we're the mother, we're the leader, we're the sister, we're the everything. And we're also coming to terms with our empowerment and knowing that if we don't communicate what is important to us, then we can't expect, you know, what can we expect? If we never communicate anything, then nothing's ever going to change.
Right, which is where the roots of lovership probably came from, you know, because we are doing so many things now, maybe moving a little bit more into our masculine, you know, linear kind of structured, got to do it, got to make the money, have the kids, you know, managing all of these things has a tendency to lose that beauty and the relaxation and the romance. And oh yeah, I actually like to have a foot rub, and lavender oil is the oil I choose. And so I can see this lovership and these formulas really help us get back in touch with who we really are, letting go of what no longer serves us. It sounds like you really have created some amazing tools for women to maintain happiness and empowerment over time.
Absolutely. And when we're not happy in our relationship, or when we're not happy in our sexual life, or when we're not happy in our marriage, really take a look at yourself and really take a look and say, oh, I'm not doing this for me. Oh, I need to do that for me. And I'm not communicating this. And the reason why my husband is not passionate in the bedroom is because I haven't told him what makes me passionate.
Yeah, yeah. I hear you. All right, we're going to take one more break, and when we come back, we're going to do a little Mad Libs with Amy and have her fill in some quick answers to some interesting questions. I'm Elisa Kreitman, your host of Just for Women, Dating Relationships and Sex. And listeners, I'd like to let you know that you can email me at Elisa, A-L-I-S-S-A, at personallifemedia.com. It's all one word. Elisa at personallifemedia.com, and feel free to comment on the show, ask questions, offer ideas. I want to hear from you. So come on to Personal Life Media, click on Just for Women, and let me know what you want to hear about. To reach Amy Kogay, her website is makemehappytv.com. You can also email her at Amy, A-Y-M-E-E, at thehappyzone.com. Okay, so you have to tell me what's going on with these. Make Me Happy TV. Let's start there. What is that?
Elisa, I have a spiritual calling to help millions of people live happier lives. And I have been working really hard of trying to get this message on the television. And so I've been in conversations with producers and agents over the last couple of years. And by 2008, maybe we'll see a happiness makeover show. So I had the website called Make Me Happy TV. If you can imagine yourself sitting in front of the TV saying, Make Me Happy TV, and add a .com.
Nice. Okay, and the Happy Zone?
The Happy Zone were segments that I produced on a show called The Happiness Show. And during these segments, I was a reporter on location with happy people. And I kept it, even though I stopped producing the segments, because I have obtained an unlimited amount of happiness that is totally sustainable. So I like the idea that Amy is in the Happy Zone.
Nice. You are too funny. This is great stuff. I love it. I love it. I love it. Okay, we'll be right back. My name is Elisa Kreitman, your host of Just for Women, Dating Relationships and Sex. I'm with Amy Kogay, relationship and happiness expert, and we'll be right back.
Listen to Coaching the Life Coach, Business and Marketing Strategies for Growth of Transformational Practices with Jason McLean, your guide in the 21st century marketplace on personallifemedia.com.
Listeners, this show has been sponsored by iFrogs. If you write in with comments or suggestions and I use them on my show, I will send you a great iFrogs iPod holder case. Just go check it out, iFrogs, iFrogz.com. And again, just write to me with your suggestions, anything you want to know, ideas, topics. I will send you an iFrogs iPod holder case. And I know they're cool because I picked them out. They're from the Exotic Collection. So if you want to go to iFrogs.com and look at those, check them out. They're really fun. I'd love to ship you one. So, Amy, we're kind of wrapping up here. This conversation has been amazing. I really see how you are a pioneer in paving the way for new consciousness, new ideas, new concepts, new exercises for women to maintain happiness over time, especially in their dating and intimate relationships. So I just want to thank you for the work that you're doing. Listeners, for texts and transcripts of this show and other shows on the Personal Life Media Network, please visit our website at personallifemedia.com. Amy, I just want to do a couple little quick questions for you. So just right off the top of your head, one word answers. Here we go. You ready? The root of sustainable happiness is?
Gratitude and kindness.
First thing to do during a breakdown is?
Take responsibility for your happiness.
One thing that is missing from society's current approach to happiness is?
The role of nutrition.
Ooh, interesting. I have to hear a little bit more about that. Tell me.
It turns out that we're eating nutritionally bankrupt food, and the food that is served to us in restaurants is subpar, and the food that's in the grocery store is also subpar. And I have to say that if we're not going to be putting the proper things in our body, then our brain is not going to make the serotonin that it needs in order for us to be happy. And thank you so much to Dr. John Gray, who's the author of Men Are From Mars, Women Are From Venus, because he has done worldwide research in finding out what it is that gives our brain the nutrients it requires in order to make serotonin. And that particular program is with Isagenics. And I'm happy to talk to anyone more about how they can utilize this particular program to increase their serotonin instead of using traditional methods like antidepressants.
I love, love, love that you brought that up, because I am inviting Dr. John Gray onto the show. He's already said yes, and we are going to explore this topic in greater depth, because women are twice as susceptible as men to depression, and I want to know what is at the heart of this. And it sounds like nutrition, serotonin levels are really at the heart of what's going on here. So thank you for saying that. And listeners, stay tuned for that interview with Dr. John Gray. Amy Cogier, happiness expert, thank you so much for being on my show. I deeply, deeply appreciate you, the work that you're doing, and your time today. Thank you so much.
Oh, Lisa, this has really been a pleasure. Thank you so much. And your listeners are so blessed to have such an amazing woman like you bringing forth this information. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm your host, Elisa Kreitman, always expanding your choices here on Just for Women, Dating, Relationships, and Sex. We'll see you next time.
Find more great shows like this on personallifemedia.com.